Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Metroplex. 8 o'clock hour, live here at Firehouse Number 1 in Burleson. Amazing turnout. We have the best listeners in the Metroplex, period, showing up 5 o'clock. 5:15, 5:45, and at 6, we want to hook you up with some breakfast and with our brand new 105.3 The Fan bottle openers. We got some G-Bag glasses as well with Sean Treif, RJ Choppy, and our Cowboys insider, Bobby Belt. Cowboys, Saints, 9 a.m. pregame Sunday. Bobby will be at the stadium. Kickoff at noon with Brad Cham and Babe Laufenberg. Before we get to your official picks and selections, RJ Choppy with the five things that he wants to see.
All right, let's get to it. Number one, pressure on Carr. He can throw the ball. You sit back, you give him time. You can make those throws, but you got to make him look like Deshaun Watson. You know, make him run all over the place. You know, throw the ball away. That's what you got to make him do. Number two, Bones, we love you. Stop trying to outsmart the room. Kick it deep. Please, just kick the ball deep. The average Cowboy defensive starting field position after a kickoff this past week was the 27-yard line. 3 yards ain't worth the risk. Just kick it deep. Don't let any of the return people get a shot at it, and let them start at the 30.
You agree with that?
No. I think wherever they have an advantage, I also think they're trying to test some things out. I think they're trying to see what was their coverage like. I think that what they're going to try to do is they're going to try to squib out of the end zone. And with Aubrey, I think they have the ability to do it.
Squib it out of the end zone.
And if they can do that, then they pick up significant yardage.
Yeah, then you pick up 10 yards. So it's got to land in from the 20, inside the 20. It has to land inside the 20 and then go into the end zone, and that's where they down it.
It is difficult. It is really difficult for a lot of these guys to catch it on the bounce. That's one of the things that they think that it's going to be a challenge. Because if you field it,
you have to return it.
You have to return it. So if you field it and you bobble it, you got to start running it out.
Right.
And so I think they feel like they've got the advantage there.
Yeah, I wonder what they're going to do. And we'll know more as the year goes on how teams handle it. Number three, set Overshown free. If he has to cover Kamara, do it. If he has to rush the passer, do it. There's like maybe three guys in the field that can outrun him. Just let him go. Four, another four per touch for Zeke. I have no idea where the hell that came from, the 4 yards carry. And it was really more than that until the very, very end. But, you know, and look, and four is not tremendous. Four is like the new three. I mean, the amount of guys that were over five last week. But compared to my expectations, 4 yards of carry feels like six or seven for that dude. And then, finally, a better second half. Whatever they did on the offense in the first half, in the second half of the first game, just do the opposite. Just do the opposite the entire game. You cannot have that. You got to have a better second half if you want to win this game.
All right, Bob, prediction and why?
So I've been going back and forth a little bit on this because of the idea of what I do think Dennis Allen is a good defensive coordinator. I do think that he's going to come up with some stuff that will frustrate Dak. He's done it before. Dak has had his struggles, with Dennis Allen defenses at times. And so that's one of the things that I'm trying to weigh here is how talented they've been defensively in recent years and schematically the way that they can kind of challenge things. The other thing that's always in my head about the Cowboys when they're at home is the fact that it's been essentially a 40-point average per game there for them with Dak over the last 5 years when they're at AT&T Stadium. They always – I think it's just under half the games that Dak started at AT&T over the last 5 years. They've scored at least 38. And so they put up points there. So I'm gonna fall down somewhere a little bit in the middle. I'm going to say Cowboys win this game 34-20.
34-20. You went 2-for-2, I believe, with the opener. You said you didn't understand why the point spread was so low. And I think you hit the over as well. So you went 2-for-2. So let's try to make it 4-for-4.
All right. So I, too, do not understand this spread. I don't understand it at all.
46.5?
No, no, just the spread.
Okay, the spread.
I don't understand the spread of this one.
Which is what, 6.5?
6.5. I think it should be much, much higher than that. I have the Cowboys winning this one, 42-17.
Woo!
The Saints are going to be an okay team. They're going to wind up winning 8, 9, 10 games somewhere in that meaty area, right? They'll be fine. They're just not on the level of the Cowboys. Like Bobby said, this team plays downhill bully ball when they play at home, unless it's a playoff game. But in the regular season, this is what they do. They just roll up on teams. They beat a Rams team last year, and they destroyed them. And that Rams team went on a run and played really good football down the stretch. They're just better than the Saints, and they're going to win big.
I agree. Take the Cowboys with the points, 32-16. That would put it like barely over the 46.5. And it has a chance to be a typical bully game. I agree. It could be even more of a runaway.
Could be.
Is Derek Carr going to be like money? Or is he going to have his pick sixes and his you know, sack fumbles?
Yeah, that's if you were to lose this game to New Orleans, would that cause you to question Dallas, or would that cause you to say, given what they did in Week 1, does that make you think New Orleans might be better?
I mean, it depends how they lose it. You know, is Dak turning it over, pump blocks, freak plays, tipped touchdowns for, you know, that get ricocheted? It depends.
I am concerned about...
like, do they come in here and handle the Cowboys? If Alvin Kamara comes in, runs down their throat, I'm like, okay, same old run defense.
The number one offensive line in Week 1, if you look at... They had the metrics out there the other day. They took Sports Info Solutions as 40% of the grade, PFF as another 40% of the grade, and then the other 20% was the ESPN pass block and run block win rate. Because generally, I think they view the pass block and run block win rate as a little more flawed, potentially, than just a grade of how well did they play, like Sports Info Solutions or PFF. So when you take that cumulatively, by far the number one offensive line in the league last week was New Orleans. And so I think that when you look at if the Saints are able to come in here, have success in the trenches, and then Kamara and Jamal Williams, two really physical runners, are able to kind of, you know, get to the second level and start doling out punishment, that would be the way that I could see Dallas struggling in this game.
So in those evaluations, Info Solutions, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Do they take into it, like, how do they factor in the opponent? Because I think we're going to find out that Carolina might be a JV team.
Sports Info Solutions, I don't know what they do. PFF does not take into account opponent when just grading the play. When they grade, did you do your job?
Right. Absolutely. For sure.
And so I don't believe Sports Info Solutions does either. I think it's just a flat grade of, like, how much success did you have doing your job, executing your job.
Okay.
KMC had on a good guest yesterday to preview the game. Be nice if Bobby could get us one of those once in a while, since he was hired to do that in part.
Well, okay. I control acts of God.
Well, you didn't. What was Week 1? Who'd you get for Week 1? You can get Ian Rappaport, but you can't get Joe Schmo.
Sorry, I won't get Ian Rappaport anymore.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll get RJ Ochoa to do it. The hire we should have made, except for Brad Sham's opinion.
Oh, God.
So they were talking about pre-snap improvement.
Seth Wall.
Ruben loves my digs. At least I make my digs for Ruben.
Yeah, well, he's mad because he just almost died in the car with me a few minutes ago.
Yeah, whoa.
Yeah, you didn't know that? So Sarah just told me. They went in the car. He took him for a ride to show him he's a good driver. Like, he's Rain Man.
And I did. Maybe I do have
psychosis. And I did.
I do have psychosis.
Turn your mic on.
You do. You have psychosis.
What did you just do? I don't even know. I have no idea what just happened.
He wanted to prove a point that he's a better driver than Chobby.
So how did you do that?
I just drove really fast and did a U-turn into traffic.
What did he do?
So he literally just went down the street and just did a U-turn.
A really tight U-turn into oncoming
traffic. Was it fast, like reckless?
It was cute.
That's right. It was
no, 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 no.
It was cute.
I don't want any of that because you literally gasped and went, "Whoa, bro!"
No, that's a lie. That's
yes, you did.
That's false accusation.
You took him in your car in a commercial break.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's insane. He's
what is the dumbest, like, prove it bet that you have lost? Like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to show you. Money-wise, physically?
I don't know. It's probably one of my...
Shots-wise?
Yeah, it's like one of those where like somebody just says, oh, you got to take a shot, and then somebody starts taunting me, and it's like, I'll do four. Fine, I'll do four right now. Like, it's probably one
so
of those.
So you sped up and took a fast U-turn.
Yeah, we were really down. Yeah, we went down the street there, and I just, like, drove fast and then did it.
He's amazing.
Did you know that he went?
I saw that he was like Sarah had mentioned, like he's really going to take him for a drive.
Yeah,
I didn't know what they were going to accomplish.
I remote started the car while we were in the middle of the segment.
Ruben, don't leave a show broadcast and don't listen to anything he tells you. Period. Ever again.
Ever.
And do not leave the show broadcast.
Oh my God.
Did he come back alive? Yes.
Barely.
Yeah, because you probably drove like
in
15.
A timely manner. Was, oh my gosh.
What?
I did not go 15. You can go during the next break too, Sean.
I don't care. I don't care. Nothing you could do on a U-turn is going to make me think that you're dumb Toretto.
He's already starting it up.
You're freaking dumb Toretto.
Dumb Toretto.
Let's talk about the pre-snap motion.
Seth Walder had the pre-snap and at-the-snap motion percentages from week one of the season. So obviously pre-snap is any sort of motion where you've just moved somebody, you know, you move a receiver in motion or you motion a running back out or bring him in the backfield. That's pre-snap motion. At the snap motion is that stuff where when the ball is snapped, somebody is moving. They're trying to get an advantage there.
Because everyone just automatically believes, right? More motion, you got a better offense.
So teams that had motion on at least 75%, pre-snap motion on at least 75% of their offensive plays went 6-1 in week one. The one loss was the Rams, who played another team that used motion on 75% of the snaps. So teams that used motion on 50% or less of the snaps went 1-7. The top 10 teams in snap motion went 7-3, while the bottom 10 teams, including the Cowboys, they were in the bottom 10 of the league in terms of motion at the snap. Bottom 10 teams went 2-8. So at least looked like a good week one for the argument that pre-snap motion and at-the-snap motion is a real tactical advantage.
My boy Brian Spagnuolo said, you got a bunch of bae on your show. Do you know what that is?
Bae? B-A-E?
Big Ultima Energy. It's a thing. If someone passes you on a Saturday morning doing 100, it's always an Ultima.
Chop and I both drive Ultimas.
I don't have an Ultima.
Are you the Maxima?
I got a Maxima.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's what he's saying. There's Nissan Energy.
Nissan Energy. Well, look, Nissan drivers were, and I do have, I've been a Nissan driver my whole life almost.
Yeah. All right.
Because we're all about, the only thing I need is those lights underneath the car.
Do you think he's a great driver? So far, you've been together a number of years.
A number of years.
I was asking your fiance.
You're going to go in the break with Sean?
Is she a good driver?
When I let her drive, she's fine.
Do you think that you're a good driver? Okay, she thinks she's.
I have
a good
no personality in the passenger seat, though. I have to drive. I don't have to do my hands.
Yeah, toxic masculinity.
That's
can't
right.
Let a female drive.
That's right.
I let Amanda drive whenever she's willing, and able. So I'm gonna keep this going. It doesn't have the best like projection for the Cowboys season, but I love the song so much. We're gonna bring it back every week until the Cowboys lose. RJ Choppy.
Oh baby,
getting you ready for the Saints. With an RJ Choppy production.
All right, Cowboy fans, it's 2024. This is the year. No more waiting. No more losing. No more disappointments. Here we go. Dak has been under fire since Green Bay whooped that ass here. Woo. And they had us falling for it all, and just like in past years. Well, Dak's got a strong arm, but he just fell apart. We've waited for this long, we're dumping the whole heart. Mike is in danger, Jerry went all in. Lamb is side, but Dak is still waiting. First round, Cowboys, hope you finally don't let us down, boys. Let us know when we be going down next in a playoff game. Zeke will go for 2.9. Gotta say, gosh dang, first round loss is bringing us pain. Holding Doomsday on the cause it's Micah's time, and these fools ain't got him outside. First round Cowboys, yeah. First round Cowboys. Woo-hoo. Not one take, six or seven, but it'll do.
Hey, the bass in that.
Yeah.
I can tell you adjusted my wife's new treble and bass perfectly, and you did it in that song. Because I was like, Bobby, is it like 6 or 8? Do I turn it all the way up? And he gave me the numbers perfectly for the sound system, and I heard it in that song.
It's the bass is fantastic in that song. You'll have to hear it live, though. We're not going to be able to play that back.
So. Let's talk about the greatness of Kamar Rocker and what he did last night, then Mike McCarthy here on Sean and RJ.
He's ready at 1-2, and here it comes. Rosarena strikes out swinging. Got him on a slider. So we have seen Rocker's ability to add and subtract velocity on his slider, and he has back-to-back strikeouts here.
4 innings, 1 run, 3 hits, early trouble, got out of it, 7 strikeouts, 17 whiffs in 74 pitches. Whether it was DeGrom, Leiter, Scherzer, Bobby, you had said that Kamar Rocker and his debut was the number one thing you were most excited about with the Rangers, and he lived up to it, and he matched it. And they get the win last night on this radio station where you hear this guy for every Rangers game. A little surprise pop-in from Jared Sandler on the D&M Leasing Hotline as the Firehouse Tour continues out here in Burleson. Could he have done anything more to exceed the hype, Jared?
Yeah, I don't know. And I just want to make it very clear.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first 3 grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Given the last time I was on air on the station talking about a Vanderbilt pitcher, you asked me to call in. I'm not calling in because of something that was said earlier. He was pretty darn good. I don't know if, you know, the word got out to everyone that, hey, he's not going to go 6-7 innings. They're going to try and control his innings and his pitches. So I saw a couple people on Twitter, you know, throwing their hands up like, why'd you take him out? But that was always a part of the plan. He's coming off the Tommy John surgery. They're not going to unnecessarily push him. And, yeah, I mean, he gave up a home run to Justin Turner. One pitch after, it looked like he struck him out. He didn't get a call on a pitch that appeared to be in the zone. That's going to happen, right? That run still counts. Not like you're going to appeal that or anything, but all that to say, I mean, it was pretty darn impressive for a first major league start. And you read the stat about swings and misses. That's kind of an underlying stat that helps demonstrate a level of dominance, and he's certainly had that, especially with his slider.
Yeah, Dawson 100% thinks he can't go past 4. That's the issue.
Dude, let that die.
What impressed you more? Was it his ability to locate the fastball or the late bite that he had on some of his off speed?
Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, RJ, what impressed me, first of all, was in the first inning, gives up 2 C&I singles. Neither ball was hit more than 78 miles an hour off the bat. And then Julio Rodriguez steals second. So here in his major league debut, three pitches in, there are 2 guys on base. I think 2 pitches later, there are runners at second and third and nobody out. And he's facing an all-star in Cal Raleigh. And he strikes him out, strikes out the next guy, and then gets a fly out and gets out of it unscathed. I think the poise and the composure is really impressive. And then I think, you know, specific to your question, I just think the slider and his ability to throw that pitch in the zone and out of the zone, and to some degree, he threw it with a couple different shapes, right? It wasn't the exact same pitch every single time. When he throws it arm side, it seems to have a little more vertical movement. When he throws it glove side, he can get a little more horizontal bend to it. So, you know, that was really impressive to me. And, you know, he really didn't need the changeup a ton. I think that, you know, as he starts to see teams more and more and he faces guys for a third time, we'll start to see more of the changeup and maybe a little bit of the curveball. But, I mean, that slider is a very special pitch.
Jared, you know, when they were both coming out of Vandy, Leiter and Rocker, a lot of the scouting reports that I read talked about, okay, Leiter, maybe just like, you know, a rotational arm, 2-3, like you had talked about. And then Rocker might, because of the type of pitcher that he has, turned into late inning, like high leverage reliever.
Let me stop right there, because I initially disagreed when Jared had said that. And I'm like, why draft at number 2 or 3 then? All that true, Jared? And is that common for a number 2 or 3 pitcher to just be projected for that low of a role?
Yeah, I think if you look at the history, first of all, of pitchers selected number 2 overall, you're going to be incredibly underwhelmed. You know, you have a lot of guys who either didn't make it, who ended up as, you know, random relievers, some guys who are good starters, but it's not like there's a track record of guys getting drafted number 2 overall as pitchers who, you know, are perennial all-stars. And every draft class is different, right? So with Jack Leiter, there was just a lot of unknown. He basically had one college season. You know, his first year was cut short very early on because of COVID, and then he was a draft-eligible sophomore. And there were concerns about the fastball command. There were concerns about, for some people, the size, but what was undeniable was the raw talent. Whereas a guy like Paul Skeens, who was drafted first, but very easily could have been drafted second had Dylan Cruz been taken first overall. That was kind of a coin flip in the weeks leading up to the draft. You know, Paul Skeens, a guy who had 3 years of college baseball, there was a lot more of what was known about Paul Skeens at the time of his selection. And so, yeah, I mean, you guys know this. Not every first overall pick in football it has the same projection. Not every second overall pick, et cetera. So, I want to make something clear here. If you draft a guy at any pick and he ends up being a number 3 starter for your organization through 6 years of team control and then maybe beyond that if you sign him, that's awesome, right? Yeah, you'd love a first overall pick to be a franchise-changing player. And if you get that, great. But I mean, not every pick is guaranteed to be that guy. So there was nothing wrong with Jack Leiter being selected in that spot. So, you know, I think that there was a little bit of a misunderstanding in saying that. If you're getting a number 2 or a number 3, I mean, hey, we love Nathan Eovaldi, right? Big game Nate. He, you know, was maybe if Corey Seager was the MVP of the World Series last year, you could make a case Nathan Eovaldi was the playoff MVP or runner-up. But Nathan Eovaldi, for most of his career, has been considered a 2 or 3.
Yeah,
he just happened to be a 1 for the Rangers last year because Jacob deGrom went down. So if you drafted Nathan Eovaldi with the 2nd overall pick, are you upset about that? No, I don't think you are. And I think that is what maybe people saw more of from Jack Leiter than, say, a Jacob deGrom type.
Jared Sandler joining us here on Sean and RJ at 105.3 The Fan. Okay, Jared, so has that – do you feel like that – conversation though has flipped, like to where now it's Kumar, you know, Kumar Rocker is solidly a future starter, and that's kind of the way they view him. And the question of reliever might be more on Jack Leiter's future.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not going to rule anything out for either, because, gosh, I mean, could you not envision fastball slider coming out of the pen? But I also think that the narrative of Kumar Rocker is an interesting one. So when Kumar Rocker went to Vanderbilt, he was, the minute he stepped on campus, people were counting down 3 years later when he would be the number one overall pick. Like, and he was great. He threw the no-hitter as a freshman. It was just like a foregone conclusion. I think that to some degree there was number one overall pick fatigue. And for 3 years, people started looking for reasons and reasons and reasons for him to not be the number one overall pick. And then the physical stuff came into play his junior year. The velocity dipped a little bit. Turned out that, you know, he needed an operation. But you know, Kamar Rocker had that sort of pedigree, right? You know, this is a guy who mm-hmm. most people thought would be the number one overall pick. And I don't think that you draft, whether it's number one overall, whether it's 10 overall, whether it's 3 overall, I just don't subscribe to the idea of drafting a pitcher who you believe is going to be a reliever there. You know, it's happened with some teams. Tyler Jay was drafted in the top 10, and it was the White Sox or Twins or whoever drafted. They got burned by it, right? There's no reason to draft a guy who you think is going to be a reliever there. Now, if Kamar Rocker does not succeed as a starting pitcher and he ends up as a dude in the back of your bullpen, all right, you know, you take lemons and turn it into lemonade. But I think that Kamar Rocker has shown a level of growth in his brief professional career that has answered some of the concerns, which is, what does he have other than the fastball and the slider? And is that velocity going to be what we need it to be? And he's, you know, he's had the shoulder thing and then Tommy John and bam. I mean, he's out there throwing 97 with a nasty biting slider. So is it still a possibility? Yes. But I don't see it right now. I think there are a lot of people in the Rangers organization who think that he could headline a rotation for years to come. And with Jack Leiter, I think that people in the organization still feel like he's a starter. Now, he is going to go back to the bullpen this turn through the rotation, but he is still going to get bulk innings, and then the Rangers will see whether they flip him and put him back in the rotation. They just have too many starters right now, and they feel like they owe it to Max Scherzer to give him 3 starts to end the year. Same with Andrew Heaney, guys who are free agents to be with a chance to showcase some stuff. And with Heaney, I don't know this to be totally true, guys, but I think there might be some incentives that the Rangers want to honor and give him a chance to hit, too. So could Leiter end up as a bullpen arm? Absolutely. But I still think the Rangers view him as a starter as well.
Sandler, in terms of the what you want to see next from Rocker, is it more pitches? Is it more innings? Like, what progression do you want to see from him as a pitcher?
Yeah, so RJ, I think he's in a really unique spot, and one of the things I wanted to research this morning is how often this has happened where a guy making his major league debut faces the same team in his first 2 outings. And that, to me, is a cool challenge because his next start is going to come against Seattle next weekend at home in all likelihood. So what I really want to see, guys, is I want to see Seattle stay in the race, and I want them to be playing for something. I want Seattle to be, you know, starving for a win because they're right on Houston's heels, and I want to see Kamar Rocker face that team and those guys for the second time in a week. I don't care so much about the innings and the pitch count. I think the Rangers are going to be relatively conservative with that, again, because he did just come back from Tommy John earlier this year. If they pick it up a little bit, if he goes to 80, 85 pitches, great, but that doesn't matter as much. I just want to see how he attacks the same lineup for the second time in a short span. Is he still fastball slider heavy? Does he work in the changeup a little more? Do we see the curve? And I don't know that there's a right answer here, right? I just want to see how it plays. If he does go fastball slider as heavy as he did yesterday, are they making adjustments, or is that combo just so dang good that, you know, they're still fooled by it? So that's what I think I'm most interested to see.
What are you expecting from DeGrom tonight?
I mean, honestly, kind of more of the same. Obviously, yeah, he goes about it a little bit differently, but, let's be real here. I mean, the reason Seattle's not in first place is because they don't hit, and they swing and miss a lot. And so it's a good matchup for a lot of pitchers, especially a guy like Jacob DeGrom. I mean, I expect with DeGrom maybe there to be some nerves. Not like big time, like I hate making public speeches type nerves. But I think he's been – listen, I mean, you guys saw the emotion on his face when he – you know, shared with everyone that he had to have Tommy John last year. And I think he's been very eagerly awaiting this, but I expect the same thing around 5 innings, you know, maybe 4, but you know, if he's efficient, which he typically is, because one of the most underrated parts of what Jacob DeGrom does, everyone talks about the velocity, everyone talks about the slider. The guy's got like incredibly silly command. I mean, it is unreal how he's able to throw these pitches, these power pitches with the command he does. That typically allows him to be efficient. So, you know, 4 or 5 innings, I think, makes sense. And I wouldn't be surprised to see, I think the line on Rocker for strikeouts yesterday in Vegas was 4.5. My guess is DeGrom might be up to 5.5. And I think that number could probably hit. I mean, I expect DeGrom to have another really good start, or a really good start, much like Kamar Rocker did.
Thank you for joining us and the time on short notice, brother. We appreciate it.
You got it, guys. I'm standing naked in my house, and I realize that I was standing in a window where people walking could possibly see.
Ah, exhibitionist. Wow. Jared.
Are they squinting?
Yeah. Shannon Sandler squinting? Over here.
You know it, RJ. Just like you, though.
Are they squinting? Jared Sandler, the DNF Lacey Hotline. Thank you to the Sandman. Mike McCarthy joins us to preview the Saints next on The Fan. Mike McCarthy brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee Company on DFW. Look at that.
There we go.
They revved it up for Coach. As soon as they heard the intro, they turned on the fire truck. Good morning, Coach. How are you?
Oh, doing great. So you're actually at the firehouse. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We remember last year you gave the firehouse the shout-out with the firefighters, and we continue to go ahead and play that on the station. So we're happy to have you back on. Man, awesome performance week one, Coach. A lot of noise around here, as you know, a lot of distractions. What did it say to you about your team that y'all went out and handled business like that and on the road against a really quality football team?
Well, definitely is, yeah. You know, that first road win is always so important, you know, definitely right out the gate in week one. But great environment to play in. I know our guys really enjoyed it. But, you know, I think like a lot of things, you know, we had a really good camp, hit our targets, had a nice week of preparation going into it. But, you know, it's good to win and still have a lot to work on. So, and that's what we've been really harping on this week, is clean up the details, because, you know, we still have a lot of growth in front of us.
Coach, I wanted to ask you a question connected to the Tua story last night. I know a lot of times you don't get to watch those games, but Tua suffered another concussion. What has been y'all's players' response to the Guardian caps and wearing those in games? How did the players receive that?
Receiving in games, haven't had a lot of conversation about in games, but I know our players, you know, favor them. I think it's like anything new. There's an adjustment period, and you've seen that the last, you know, what, 2 years, and but you're seeing guys, you know, more and more guys wear them now. As far as in games, I think that the only, you know, real conversations that I've been a part of is the new helmets that are out there. You know, so a lot of guys are considering that because of their level of protection.
Bill Belichick said he's more interested in kind of even seeing his team in week two versus week one. And Dak yesterday was saying that he sees a lot of times the most improvement from week one to week two with a football team. Do you agree with that, Coach? And why is that big leap a lot of times from week one to two?
Yeah, it's definitely a metric that's supported. And I think just like anything, I think in today's era, of training camp and how it's handled and truly not, you know, taking the field as a full team until week one. So there's always that opportunity of, okay, hey, we've taken our first step. So we now, you know, clearly know where we are and who we are, and you definitely have a chance to build off of it, because, you know, until you get out there and go a full four, you know, full four quarters in live action, you know, it's really not the same. You try to simulate it in training camp, and then obviously with the preseason games laid out the way they are, yeah, it's definitely has a here we go moment to it.
Is it the communication offensively that generally that you find has the biggest jump, or what is it?
Well, I think you can go all the way through. I mean, you can talk about your communication, your boundary communication, your pace operation, the on the field communication, all those things, the coaching headset interaction, but you know, you do have it throughout the preseason. So I think the communication challenge all the way through, you have a chance to improve on, because anytime you line up, you have a chance to evaluate, correct, and apply. And then the fundamentals, you know, I think if you watch around the league, you know, just the fundamentals are something that you're really, really going to emphasize more than ever in September, because, you know, it's you just the time that you have leading into it.
Coach, you talked to, you know, there's been a lot of discussion during the offseason about the running game and what that would look like and how the carry breakdown would look like. How do you feel like you guys handled that in week one? And is that similar to the way you would like that workload to look moving forward, or do you anticipate some tweaks?
Well, I think the biggest thing in week one was the run attempts in the second half. I think it would have painted a better picture of what the, you know, what the plan was throughout the game. But I thought the first half we were,
we were rotating the way I envisioned it. I would have liked to do some more opportunities. But then, you know, this week's a different game plan. There's different things you're emphasizing, you know, both schematically and personnel, personnel-wise. And then, you know, and we'll see how this sorts out.
Mike McCarthy joining us here, 105 through the Fan. So when you're up in a game like you were in the second half last week, and their offense clearly was not able to get anything going for the most part throughout that game, does you change how you call the game kind of based on what the other team's offense is doing, and is that kind of what happened in the second half because the offense did stall out a little bit?
Well, our challenge on the offense was the fight. You know, we had five third downs, you know, obviously with Terps return, so we had less series, you know, in the second half. But our biggest correction was, you know, was the five third downs. I mean, three of them were, you know, plays that we felt were clearly in position to execute. We just, you know, whether it was the mechanics of the protection or, you know, it was something that, you know, we could do better fundamentally. So that was the biggest thing for us offensively, because, you know, I definitely would have liked to got another score there in the third quarter and to really put the game out of reach even further. But, you know, and I think like anything, you see it all the time. If you don't take that opportunity there when you have someone on the ropes, you know, then their offense can, you know, try to scrape and fight back, get in the game. And, you know, they had some long series against our defense there when we were playing more of a, you know, I don't like the word prevent, but more of a shell defense.
Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy joining us here on 105 through the Fan. Coach, there was a lot of discussion, obviously, about the two young offensive linemen heading into this game, Cooper Beebe and Tyler Guyton. How did they grade out for you, and what would you like to see them continue to improve upon this week?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just, you know, get ready for the challenge that's in front of them. I think just like anything, now that they've played, you know, their videos on film, you're playing another, you know, a very good defensive line, defensive front. This is a very experienced front, but you know they play differently, you know, from a technical standpoint. So they're both going to be really challenged this week, and I just want to, you know, see them build off what they accomplished last week.
Coach, you know, there's obviously been a lot of discussion about the New Orleans situation and all the weather that they've been dealing with the, you know, the hurricane making landfall. You spent a lot of time there in New Orleans in that city. Just kind of your thoughts for them and that community this week as they prepare for a football game.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, in my thoughts and prayers, I think any time you have a chance to be part of a community and, you know, you deal with the hurricane situation there, I mean, it's, you know, it affects everybody. So, you know, at home and at work. Hopefully everybody pulls through cleanly. It's definitely a challenge.
Coach, one of the things that really has jumped out about your fantastic regular season record is handling the business that Vegas says that you guys are supposed to handle when you guys are expected to win or you guys are a favorite. And a lot of times, you know, that doesn't happen in the NFL. Just look at week one again. What is your secret sauce to getting guys up for games that maybe are not as hype? Because Michael Lombardi told us anyone can get up for the playoff games, but how do you get your guys to handle business and get up for maybe the games that everyone thinks you're supposed to win, which you guys have done a great job of over the years?
I think it really points to our locker room and the consistency in our process. I think you have to, you know, so much of what we do in season, there's a flow and a, you know, and a detailed scheduling, you know, focus on it, that you have to get the efficiency of your play on the field as high as you can. And I think everything leading up to that, you know, helps that and supports that. So I think we do have a good process. You know, it's just like any program that you're building as a head coach. It may take a little longer than you want in the beginning, but it's something that, you know, we have in place here. And then ultimately, is our guys emotionally, you know, able to get up at a high level week in and week out, and we know, you know, everybody, we're going to get everybody's best shot too. So it's something that we keep at the forefront of our thinking and our prep plan.
You could argue that the Saints had the most impressive win in week one. What jumped off the tape in their game against Carolina?
Really good football team, you know, all the way through. You watched the study, you know, into last week and early this week, you know, we felt that the challenge is definitely going to be there. in all three areas. So obviously the point production, but you could really see it at the end of last year. You know, you look at their numbers from last year and the way they came out the gate against Carolina. So this is a playoff caliber football team we're playing.
Does it help you in the prep that they won in such convincing fashion that the message can be relayed, hey, you definitely can't take a week off because of the scoreboard that they put up last week?
I mean, the true reality in our game, you never have a week off. So, yeah, that's not even part of the thought process or even been entertained. So, no, they're coming in here and feeling good about themselves, you know, feeling confident. You know, we're obviously confident, but, you know, we know we want to improve this week. We're playing at home. It's our home opener. So a lot of energy going to be in the building on Sunday.
Yeah, it is. What kind of challenges does Kamara present? I mean, he seemed like he saw the fountain of youth last week.
Well, definitely. No, he's a weapon. I mean, he's very detailed in, you know, his run courses and so forth. But, you know, one thing you've always respected from when he hits the second level, he can take it to the end zone. So, you know, he's big-time player.
Coach, how has Jake Ferguson progressed throughout this week and where you guys view him heading into Sunday?
He's doing well. I did a little more yesterday, so we'll see how he feels this morning and set a plan. But, you know, he's getting close.
Coach, also, you know, you're going up against Dennis Allen this week in the Saints, which is obviously one of the, you know, Dennis Allen, one of the more revered defensive minds in the NFL. What kind of an adversary is he in terms of just the chess match that goes into preparing for a football game?
A very good chess match. Does a lot. You know, he's, you know, multiple coverage defense. Has some really good pressure packages. So similar to some of the things Mike Zimmer does here. So he schematically is a big challenge.
Overshown is getting a ton of love, both from Micah, the fans, all of us, not just for the personality, but some of those plays that he made in week one. How do you feel about the linebacking group overall and what DeMarvion and other additions, Kendricks with a big first week, just how you feel about the linebacking group heading into week two?
Well, I think our linebacker room is excellent. You know, obviously we have some new faces in there, and it's you know, great to have Demo back. I mean, I think everybody, you know, both on our team and in the eyes on the game saw what he's capable of doing, you know, with his impact plays. So it's just a really dynamic group. I just want to keep seeing them improve each week. So I think we've got a really good mix of veterans and young players there.
Coach, the average start on the kickoff, so on the new rules, first game with the new rules, the average start when you guys kicked it off, I think it was around the 27-yard line. Going forward, you know, as we get more data on this, do you see just kicking it deep every time and just giving them the ball at the 30 versus the risk of the long return maybe the way to go?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing is it's part of your game plan. We're obviously watching the analytics of it. You know, John Fossil is someone that's, you know, was part of the installation of the rules and the changes there, so at a high level. So we feel like, you know, we have a good grip on what it's capable of doing, but you definitely watch the trends of the decisions, and at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's still part of the game plan. You know, whether you know, we're playing indoors this week at AT&T, so, you know, all those things kind of factor into your thinking.
Coach, thank you so much for the time, as always. Let's make it 2 for 2, and we'll do it again next week.
All right, thank you, man. Have a good weekend.
And we had Mike McCarthy's replay there. Thank you to Coach for joining us. And because there was no Below the Belt today, I still have to remind you that Below the Belt is brought to you by A1 Air.
How many former NFL players are calling for Tua to retire? And RJ makes you some football money with an NFL and college football degenerate. Final hour from Burleson. Stop out and say what's up right here on The Fan.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.